podcast in the world. From WWE to DNA Impact, by way of the NWA, it's time for Reffin' It Up with legendary referee Brian Heppner and guest host, Mr. Reffin' Rant himself, Jimmy Corderas. An all-new episode starts in... This is Reffin' It Up.
Welcome back to Reffin' It Up. I am RJ. I am joined by the two greatest professional wrestling referees of all time. First and foremost, from the Great White North, Mr. Jimmy Corderas. And, well, if he's breathing, he's probably pissing somebody off on Twitter, Mr. Brian Heppner. But first, Jimmy, what's going on? Oh,
whoa. Yeah, you got my Canadian shades on. What can I tell you? Jimmy effing Corderas.
He's got his poker face on. That's it. He's got his poker face on.
There you go. I had to throw them on there in honor of Seth Rollins. But anyways, I'm doing great, man. I'm amped up. The road to WrestleMania is really revving up. And, you know, they're in high gear right now. And I'm loving every minute of it. And not just them. I'm lovely being a wrestling fan right now.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Brian, what's up, buddy?
Not a whole lot. Hey, Jimmy, is it still snowing there?
Finally stopped. We got rain today.
Oh, so you still can't wear those shades?
No. Well, yeah, it did get sunny for a little bit. It pops in and out, so I can still put them on. The only problem with these are these shades. Too bad the people can't see them at home. They block so much vision, you can't see out of them. They don't just block sun. They block vision. Because of the Canadian flags.
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah, so.
That's a bit gaudy.
Yeah. You know what? Hey, no worse than Seth Rollins.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, guys, before we get started, I would like to say, throw out our thoughts and prayers to all the people in Baltimore and also all those that were affected by it, including us as Americans, because that bridge transports quite a bit of stuff for our country. So it's a sad situation. And our thoughts and prayers here at Reffin' It Up are out there for you guys. So wanted to start with that.
Absolutely, yes.
Without question. So why don't we do this, guys? We got a very busy schedule here for you guys this week. So why don't we send up to our first count and get started.
This is your one count.
Jimmy, like you said, it is a crash course. We're in the driver's seat to WrestleMania coming up here in a matter of days. And down there in Philadelphia, and this Cody, Roman, Rock, Seth, this whole thing, we'll call it, this whole feud is heating up, and I'm okay with it, because you got a lot of stuff going on, and it's a lot, the possibilities are endless, I think.
Right, and it's very unpredictable, and I like what you said there, RJ, driver's seat, it reminds me, because as you guys know, I listen to two things on Sirius XM, and that's 70s on 7 and Busted Open. And I've been listening to a lot of 70s on 7 and Driver's Seat. Ooh, Driver's Seat. Man, walking around the house singing, driving the wife crazy.
What is going on?
Man, I'm in a good mood. I'm in a good place, man. What can I tell you?
Good and for you, Jimmy.
The Rock and... Yeah, I know people are kind of critiquing the Roman Cody segment, saying they wanted to see more from it. I like that it didn't give away too much. People want to see crash television. They're very stimulated by what they see visually, but they're missing all the nuances and the intellectual conversations that are going on. And, you know, and the little subtleties. In that particular scenario, we saw Cody take it up a little bit, that level of intensity. He didn't go full-blown, you know, I'm going to, you know, you talk about my mom, I'm going to punch you in the face, because that's anybody's natural reaction. That would be my reaction.
Absolutely.
You talk about my mom, my dad, my wife, anybody, you know, I might get my ass kicked, but you're going to be in a fight and you're going to know it. And that's the kind of attitude I like to see from him, but not get personal and physical yet. We got that the other night from The Rock, which I think, you know, not skipping over what happened with Roman and Cody, but that was visceral. That was different. that took it to another level. And people are saying, well, it makes Roman look like he's in the back seat and he's a side chick or whatever they call it on the.
Oh, God.
But you know what? You still got two SmackDowns and one Raw to go before WrestleMania. Before, you know, you got to, before you get to night two, you got to go through night one.
Yep.
And that's the main story right now. And then you can play off of that to get to night two. I'm just, you know, trying to condense everything into one little small package, but there's so much there to dissect. It's incredible.
Yeah. Jimmy, I, you know, there's two feelings I've got here, and these are opinions. Okay. These are opinions, but I felt like the Cody Roman thing on SmackDown, you know, in ring was very well done and good. I just feel like it was flat because there was no Rock. I felt like it wasn't, the intensity wasn't there. I felt it was pretty good. I did. And then, like you said, not trying to jump forward. First of all, I love Cody, but the character that he's transferring or transposing or I don't fucking know, that he's going to, I don't like. He's a crybaby bitch. He's begging for people to cheer for him. He's begging for people to give him that babyface rub. I feel like that he in that promo on Monday felt the ship sailing away as being the top babyface over the Rock. I think he feels it's 50-50 and possibly 60-40 and is doing what you don't supposed to do. But talking to agents that I talked to throughout my career, you never want to go out and ask for people to cheer for you. But he's doing that now. What are your thoughts on that, Jimmy? I mean, like I said, it's an opinion, okay? But I just feel it's that way.
No, I get exactly what you're saying. You don't want to beg for that audience appreciation. And sometimes he does that when he does those little things, like he looks to the crowd looking for a reaction and that sort of stuff. But what we saw on this past Monday with him and Rock, when Rock surprisingly showed up on Raw, which I like too, you didn't advertise it because you didn't have to.
Right.
The place was sold out. People were going to tune in anyways to find out what Cody's reaction was going to be. And with him coming out, you saw the place erupt.
Yeah.
The Rock just commands that. He's a superstar, not just in wrestling. Globally, the guy's a superstar. Walks in the ring, and you can see it was that 50-50 or 60-40 you were talking about, Brian. But then that little thing, because everybody was waiting for Rock to be Rock and go off on him on the mic, and he didn't. Mm-mm. He leaned in. He whispered, "Tonight, I'm going to make you bleed." I'm not a great lip reader, but that's what I think he said.
And is that what you,
but no,
so Jimmy, you think that's what was said?
I think that's what he said, because when I saw the replay, I want to look at his lips specifically to see if I can read it. And I'm not a good lip reader, you know, by any means.
Right.
But that's what I think he said to him. And then we did, you know, he walked out of the ring without saying a word on the microphone so that people could hear it. And they went nuts. They didn't like it at all. And
yeah.
He did what he's supposed to do, be the heel. And then when he got to the back and Jackie Redmond asked him, Rock, you know, if you don't mind me asking you, what did you say to Cody out there? And the way he pauses is so cool and just waits for the right moment to say, why don't you ask Cody, and walks off.
Right.
And then you think he's done for the night. And then they do the surprise thing at the end. I like where it's going. Yes, I get the thoughts of Roman being the second piece of this puzzle, feeling like he's a step back in this thing. But I think Roman, all he needs to do is one little thing. If you give me a second here, just to explain. Let's say on the go home SmackDown before the Friday night before the first night of WrestleMania, when they hit the ring and they go to do their promo to promote tomorrow night, the tag team match, Rock comes with the microphone just before he says anything. Roman stops him, puts that hand on the mic, stops him, and just takes it away from him and says, the people have heard enough from you. I'm the head of the table. Time for me to speak.
Oh, that's good.
And then you get that little side look from Rock going, okay, now you're planting seeds in people's mind while going, oh, what's going to happen here? Are they going to get into it too? Because I'm thinking eventually down the line, that's where they're leading to go, Rock and Roman.
All right, boys. So with all that being said, let's get your thoughts. I know we're a little early on this, but to remind our listeners, yours truly has a bet with Dave LaGreco from Busted Open Radio. And the conditions are this. If Cody doesn't finish his fucking story, Brian Hebner takes over Friday, Busted Open. If he finishes his story, I know, listeners, you're going to be very upset. But yours truly will not be on for a week, and it will be led by Dave LaGreca. Now, we do have two more SmackDowns and another Raw to go to, so your opinions can change between now and then, and we will update this as we go, week to week, as we always do. Where you at, boys? Y'all with me or against me?
RJ, I'm going to let you go first.
So, originally, I will admit that I was against you. But now that I've seen a lot transpire over the last number of weeks since, you know, Raw, SmackDown, what have you, I'm with you now, Brian. I really think Roman's going to retain some sort of fashion. A lot of people are saying it's going to be Seth's going to screw him over. This person's going to screw him over. He's going to win clean. Not a lot of people are saying that Cody is going to win outside of one Dave LaGreca. Went, hey, each their own. But I really think they're got to do something new with Seth. They really do. They have to turn him. They don't have to, I should say. But he needs a new paint of coat or fresh paint of coat or whatever Bruce Pritchard says.
Fresh coat of paint.
And fresh coat of paint, that too. And yes. Because for me, it's like, all right, well, here comes Seth. He's going to do his laugh. He's going to do his dance. Turn him heel. You know what I mean? And obviously, you're going to need somebody, you know, to be that heel. But one also thing I want to put out there, too. A lot of people, they're forgetting Mr. Senior Money in the Bank, Damian Priest. You know, he could be laying in the weeds a little bit, whether that be for the heavyweight title between Seth and Drew, or whether it's going to be he's going to wait till night two to see who wins. Because if Cody wins, this can be my bold prediction for WrestleMania. If Cody wins, we will see Damian Priest come out, cash in, and win the title.
All right, before Jimmy, you go, I know Jimmy is scratching and clawing. RJ, I just wanted you to know before we continue, your job is safe. Your job is safe.
Thank you. That was the majority of why I agreed with you.
So. Oh, you stop it.
I fully get where you guys are going with this thing, but I'm going to be the guy standing alone in the field on this one.
Wait a minute. I didn't agree with everything he just said. I just said my statement. Cody's not finishing the story at WrestleMania, but now go ahead.
Okay. And I have to respectfully disagree with my good brother in stripes because I kind of feel like the story has to finish at WrestleMania. And I know people say, well, it doesn't have to. It can continue on. I know a lot has been talked about that show that's going to be at Madison Square Garden in September. That would make perfect sense to this story. And it does make perfect sense for this story because that's where his dad got screwed out of the title back in the day. And you want to bring it full circle. But at the end of the day, you also want the people who are solidly behind Cody because he has garnered a huge following. Can this story continue past WrestleMania? That's the challenge. I mean, yes, you can make an argument for it going past WrestleMania and people getting invested, but it's going to be a difficult task, in my opinion. And Cody mentioning, you know, and also The Rock, and it's been said several times, if you don't finish your story at WrestleMania, you're done. You're not getting another chance. So that kind of plants another seed. And it's not the fact that, oh, everybody's saying, well, if that happens, then it's too predictable. I've made this analogy. I think I made it to you guys before, where you seek a movie or a book based on a true story. You know what the ending of the story is, but it's the story getting to that ending that is the most compelling. And that's where I think we're going to be enthralled here. If Cody wins, in my opinion, RJ, with all due respect, I don't want Damian Priest involved in this in any way, shape, or form.
Should be involved in this.
But here's my thing. There was an Easter egg planted on Monday night too, when Brock, and I said this on the Wrestling Inc. podcast on Monday night, right after the show, when Rock was beating the snot out of Cody, bloodying him up, and they were outside in the rain in Chicago in the back there in the loading area, and they panned a little bit towards a tractor trailer parked at the dock. There were two prominent faces on the side of that tractor trailer, and Bully pointed it out on Tuesday morning too. What do they say? Great minds think alike. I'd like to think, but there were two faces on the side of that trailer, John Cena and Stone Cold Steve Austin. And if you want to make it a fair fight, even though it might be bloodline rules, you can have Rock, Jimmy and Jay, Jimmy and Solo come out the ringside looking like right from the get go. The match hasn't even started yet. They're out there looking like they're going to interfere. Hit somebody's music. One of the stars of the past. You can hit Triple H's music. The game comes out because there's a little tension between him and Rock over who's the boss. Maybe Hunter could come out, point to those guys, then point to the interim way, and you hit somebody's music like a Cena. The place will go nuts. Then you hit, you know, maybe a Stone Cold and the glass breaks. Can you imagine that place when if the glass breaks and Stone Cold comes out?
Yeah, no.
And they can go. I know Hunter's a little bit limited in what he can do right now, but he could probably throw a few punches at least. You know, they go down to ringside, they clear house, and they make it a fair, it might be bloodline rules, but there's a fair fight, and they could have their, you know, anything goes match. But Cody, I believe, if he's going to go over at WrestleMania, which I think he will, has to be one-on-one without somebody helping him win. They could help him even the odds by keeping it clear, but not get involved in the match per se.
All right, so I have to say this, and Jimmy, you have a very, very valid point. Not about anybody else that you just mentioned, but about this part of it. If Cody doesn't win, when I was on Busted last week, Busted Open Radio, Nick had a great point, which was close to yours, is that do people lose interest in him finishing the story? Because now it's 2 years in a row, basically, that it's not finished. That to me is the most valid point I've heard out of all of them. I have heard all of them, and none of them make sense to me except that one. But my rebuttal to him was that there's more money to be made. But then again, his rebuttal back to me was, but would the money be gone because people don't want to spend it no more because they're tired of rooting and cheering for this thing to happen, and it just doesn't happen the second consecutive year in a row.
Right.
So that to me, and like I said on the show, all right, we're all just supposed to think the obvious is not the obvious. That's what we're all supposed to think. I just think that's horseshit. I don't like it. I don't like it. And I think it only makes it better if he doesn't. And I don't know the reason why. And I can tell you right now, if anyone helps him in any capacity, anyone, that story is not told. That story is not told. He has to do it and overcome the odds by himself. If he doesn't do it, the story's not told. And if he does have help, I'm sorry. I'm not talking about Cody. I'm talking about the character. There's a difference here. Then he's a bitch. He's a bitch and needed someone to help him. Whether it's his mama, whether it's fucking Cena, whether it's, I don't care who it is. If anyone is involved in helping him win that match, he never finishes the story anyway.
No, I get your point, Brian, completely. Like I said, if somebody were to come out, whether it's a past superstars, whoever it might be, if they could pull some strings and get dust in there, which would make a lot of sense, not to get involved in the match, just to help even the odds by clearing out the outside interference.
I'm fine with that.
That's it. That's the extent of it. Nobody getting in the ring, nobody taking cheap shots. I agree with that. But if I can make a quick analogy in baseball, you have three strikes before you're out. But in this situation, I don't know if people could wait for the potential strike three. After strike two, they might lose interest.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
That's my only worry.
But it depends on how it's done, Jimmy. You know how creative WWE's been lately. If they put something creative back there that pisses people off and says, damn it, he's got to finish it. If it's there's ways of doing it, believe me. And it can be done. It can be done. And I also don't think that they're going to – here's another thing, and then we can move on because we can talk about this for forever. As long as I got beer, we can talk about it. But but if man, I don't want y'all to think I'm crazy because I'm not crazy.
No.
But if the story's not finished, what's wrong? What's wrong with that? And they turn him heel, and he becomes a Heyman guy. I know this is way off the chart. I know it is, but I see this happening. I see this happening. I'm being dead serious. I don't know. I don't think that they would also let him have this title reign to catch Hogan and then just end there. That's another thing. You know, don't they want this record to happen? I mean, they've obviously pushed for it.
They've definitely alluded to it several times, but that could be the beauty of this thing, that he doesn't get there because whether it's Cody, whether it's his own cousin, somebody prevents him from attaining that goal.
So basically, Jimmy, you're saying Dave LaGreca is going to take over my show. All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
No, I don't want him to do it. Don't get me wrong here. It'd be kind of different, but now you're trying to put me in a place where I can go, oh boy, here we go. But this is just from a booking standpoint, from a wrestling standpoint. I think it does make sense that Cody does. Everybody in wrestling's got a story. I get it, but this 100%. One here, but this one here is the one they're pushing, you know, very heavily and making people climb on board. And as for Cody going forward, I don't want to see him turn heel anytime soon because he looks like the face of the company. He's the guy who sticks around for an hour after the show, signing autographs, taking pictures with little kids and all that sort of stuff. He's almost like this generation Cena. Like who, you take someone like John Cena, who has done more make-a-wishes in the world than John Cena? Nobody. He is just that guy because that's in him. And Cody's that guy. And he could be the guy that you can build a company around as a representative for the brand. You know what I mean? Because it is a different world now.
All right, I'm going to be quiet. Let's move on.
Well, why don't we do this, guys? Before we got a limited time, we got about 10-15 minutes before our guests are coming in this week. So why don't we send it up to our Reffin Review?
This is Reffin Review.
We are back with our Reffin Review before we bring in our guests this week, Psycho Boy Fodder and Angelina Love. Looking forward to that, guys. But first, Brian, you're the king of social media, it seems like, this week, because Jimmy hasn't been getting heat, we'll say, this week online as much as you this week. But
shockingly.
You dropped something. Yeah, shockingly, right? You dropped something. I believe it was, it was this morning. Correct? Yes, this morning.
It was actually last night. It was Tuesday night.
Tuesday night. Yeah, that too. You said, and I quote, who's teaching/coaching the refs down at NXT? Whoever it is, after watching last night, needs to teach/coach the obvious stuff for working TV, like being in camera shots or cues. But I guess they get a break because they are technically training, right? So keep that in mind, guys. We are not only calling out AEW in Referee Review all the time. We do notice, and by we, I mean Brian and Jimmy, notice when stuff isn't, you know, necessarily need to tighten up the screws a little bit there in NXT and WWE. But Brian, what was your main idea behind this comment?
Well, the thing is, I try to be a person that stays on top of what we preach and teach here at Ref and Review. And basically, I was tuned all in to NXT, and I wanted to watch the referees and study what was going on. And two things popped out, and they were the two I mentioned in my tweet. Stay out of the camera view and stop giving obvious cues. And that happened on several occasions, and it was not good. I mean, it was bad, meaning they couldn't find a shot because I guess they used less cameras probably for NXT. I'm not sure. They could not find a shot. Yeah, maybe. They could not find a shot for several of these referees because they were so in the way, they had to shoot their ass, the referee, or not where they needed to be to see the shoulders. Not only that, but the cues, especially going to breaks, were so obvious. They do this dive in. They're standing there working, doing what they're supposed to do. And then all of a sudden you just see their whole body and their head shoot into the talent to give them the important cue that I guess they've asked for or that they knew to do. This has got to be coached early, especially at this stage in NXT. To me, unless I have the whole NXT concept wrong. This has got to be teached early, especially if you're going to be on TV. So my question mainly was, do they have someone teaching them? And if it is, who is it? And why is this not being taught properly? Or are the guys not following through? I don't know which. I'm not trying to bury anybody. Once again, we don't bury them on here. Mm-hmm. I could call out the referee it was, or the other one it was two of them. But I'm not. I'm not. It's just very obvious, and I saw it, and it was right away hit me, and it bothered me the rest of the whole time. It just bothered me the whole time. And it's once you are a referee and you do it as long as me and Jimmy, and you start seeing the shit that you were told not to do, and they continue to keep doing it throughout the whole match, it just is like, ugh, I can't not stop watching that. But that's why. That was why I tweeted that.
No, I completely agree with you, Brian. I see it when, like you said, coming from where we come from, we notice these things that others may not notice. And the art of passing on of cue without making it obvious that you're passing on a cue can be done correctly and can be taught to the younger referees. Because I see that also on the main roster at times.
Yes, yes.
It's not just at NXT. And I get it. They're under pressure. Okay, go tell them that it's, we're going to break. Tell them to go to the break spot, whatever the case may be. So they kind of like in a rush go, oh, I got to go over there instead of waiting for the opportunity. It could only take a second, 2 seconds to wait. So they hit a move and go over like you're checking on the talent. That's all you have to do. Lean in. Hey, are you okay? We got three to go. Whatever the cue is. Okay, we got to go to break. Okay, he's good to go. Continue. And then, do that motion where you're, okay, continue with the match. Put your hands to, you know what I'm talking about, B.
I do. Jimmy, you know what I've thought about, and I mean, I'm so sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
And I want you to think about this. Here's what's lost in today's refereeing. It's not just not being maybe trained appropriately. It's composure. Composure of the mind where, like you just said, instead of them having a panic attack, because I feel like that's what happens in their mind. It's just like, oh, shit. Sean just told me to go tell him they have 1 minute to the break spot. Instead of keeping your composure, because you have 10 seconds, 20 seconds, that minute's not going to be gone that quick.
Right.
That composure is lost. It's like they have no confidence in their ability to get it transpired or time it in their own head. So if someone said to me on my ear or in my ear, sorry, not on it, in it, and said, you have 2 minutes. All right. Well, if it takes me a minute to get to them in my head, I'm calculating. Right. Then I get to them and I say, hey, we're going to the break, right? We need to get there. And that's the lost part of it, I think, is really the key word now for the referees. And I wish I would have said that on Busted Open. The composure is gone.
Right.
And the confidence.
And as far as getting in the camera shots too, that's another issue. Obviously, there's several cameras around there. And as you know, Brian, we were told, especially on pinfall attempts, get in a position where you can see both cameras. It has to be able to be work the horseshoe from hard camera side. The card camera side, you never step in front of the talent unless it's absolutely you're stuck and you got nowhere to go. And then when you cut across, get your ass over there and get out of the shot as fast as you can. So those things need to be, taught to these younger referees. And please stop the swipe. I know we keep harping on this, but I just can't unsee it anymore. And it's gotten to the point where my wife, Audra, sees it. Oh, my goodness, that one was obvious.
Well, hey, Jimmy, I will say, after watching NXT, it was not even near as bad as their main roster referees.
Exactly.
And AEW, forget it. I mean,
just between us, I have a friend of mine who referees, a good friend of mine who referees down at NXT, and I kind of reached out to him for a little feedback. And since then, it seems to be less of a problem. Let's put it that way. And hopefully they're understanding that it's coming from places not to throw them under the bus, but to try and help them out.
Well, tell him to work on his positioning as well, because he was one.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
A little peek behind the curtain too, guys. And I've told both of you guys this before too, but since I've been doing the show with both you guys, now I'm noticing each and everything now. And I have to thank you for that, even though I really regret it. But hey, it is what it is. It was funny because I was watching Raw with Gavin last night. And same sort of thing. You can see when they're leaning in, telling him the cues. I said, all right, well, they're going to commercial. He's like, what? He's like, no, they're not. They're in the ring stuff. I said, buddy, just wait.
Wait.
Sure yeah. as hell.
There's the bump outside and some of the.
Yep.
You know, that used to bother the living crap out of me when they used to go to every break with a spot to the outside. But then I realized, wait, that makes perfect sense. Because yep. if you're doing in-ring action going to break, you know, what's there to look forward to? You know, at least when you yeah. bump to the outside, you can say, okay, will he make it back in the ring? We'll find out right after this break. And they're not, you don't feel like you're missing action.
No, you're right. You're right, Jimmy. And even when I watch with one of my friends, you know, or my roommate or my kids, it annoys them so bad. I don't mean to do it. I just can't help it. But I'm like, 5 minutes left, guys. What time is it?
yeah.
Or they're going to break here in a second. Right in yeah. a second, they're going to, and they're like, how do you know that? And why are you telling us? And I'm like, too many years of doing this shit.
Yeah. yeah. Right. But why don't we do this, guys? Why don't we take a break real quick, hear from our sponsor this week, Mad Cat Beard Care. Absolutely phenomenal. I actually got in some new stuff today, guys. I put it on. Mm-hmm. My wife actually likes it. So, hey, I smell better and I make my wife happy. So what the hell? It's good stuff. So why don't we hear from them? And we'll be right back with our guest, Psycho Boy Fodder and Angelina Love. Excuse me. Let's take a quick time out from this great episode to talk about our sponsor, Mad Cat Beard Care. Ever since I've been growing out my beard, I had the biggest issue of finding the right product from the right company until I found Mad Cat Beard Care. Absolutely phenomenal. The best beard balms, the best beard oils in the world. And if you don't have a beard or you don't have somebody in your life that has a beard, they have great merchandise. They have hats, they have t-shirts, they have medallions. And the best part about it is a percentage of each purchase will go to an animal rescue or a nonprofit organization. Post a picture of you using your Mad Cat Beard Care products and tag them with the hashtag Mad Cat Beard Care or Cats Beards Pro Wrestling on all your social medias for a chance to win free stuff. But head over right now to their website at Mad Cat Beard Care and use the promo code REFFINITUP to get 15% off your entire product line over there at Mad Cat Beard Care. Thank you so much for sponsoring today's episode, and let's send it right back up to you guys.
This is your two count.
Welcome back to our second count here at Reffin' It Up, and I am excited, ecstatic, to bring in one of my dear great friends that I had the pleasure of working with for many, many years, and her husband, Mr. Fodder, Psycho Boy. And this is actually our first episode with a power couple together on our show. We have had some power couples, but never on the show together. So I want to welcome you both in. Welcome to the show. Angel, I love you, buddy. Mr. Fodder, I may love you. We'll see here in about an hour. Welcome to the show, guys.
I'm sure you will.
Thanks awesome. For having us. We very, very much appreciate it.
Wonderful to see you guys.
Yeah, great to see you guys and great to meet you, Mr. Fodder. This is awesome getting to catch up with you, Angelina. It's been a long time, you know, from the Great White North.
Well, I appreciate the depth of your Canadian accent that I can hear right now. It's wonderful.
Does it show that bad?
Well, I could just pick it up like right away. If I ever like go home, I usually like, you know, for a few days, if I come back, it's like, it's all thickened, you know?
I hear you. And speaking of Canada, this is where you got your start too. Just down the road here, your original trainer was, if I'm not mistaken, Rob Fuego, right?
Mm-hmm. He's just the perfect, like trainer for all of us. Mostly like for the girls, like as a female, I really feel like I couldn't have asked for a better trainer, you know, because he's just so like mild mannered, mild tempered. He's goofy and likes to have fun. And he's so patient with us. And he was always really excited to like show us new things to do. And it was like me and Gail and Tracy. So like not patting us on the shoulder, but he had a good crew of girls just to train. So we just had a lot of fun because we were all like, we all hung out together and we were all friends. We were all doing indies together. So it was really like a family thing.
You know who he kind of reminds me of, and people who aren't familiar with who Rob is, because they know Ron Hutchinson, Training Edge, and Christian. They know Scott D'Amore. You know, they know those guys. And But Rob was kind of reminded me of a little bit of Al Snow, outside of when Al Snow gets amped up. Because, you know, when Al goes off, Al can go off. But Rob, right. like you said, was always so mild-mannered, and it was a nice... Mm-hmm. It was a nice, fresh thing seeing, especially coming from the world of WWE, and then seeing that, because I got to become friends with Rob, and he's a good, really good.
Oh, he's a wonderful person. Yeah. He's a wonderful person. I remember one time, I can't remember, maybe it was Raw. I think it was a Raw. Probably like maybe 2000. One or two came to the Sky Dome. I still call it the Sky Dome. I never call it the Rogers Center. It's still the Sky Dome to me.
Yes.
And he was the dark match, you know, and then, you know, it was like 40,000 people, you know, in the Sky Dome, whatever, for Raw. And he was the dark match. So we were like all losing our minds because like that was our trainer.
Yeah. I remember that Raw distinctly because I got belly to belly by Ken Shamrock and ankle lock. So I volunteered for it since it was my hometown.
Sure. There you go. Get your shit in, man.
Exactly.
So, Psycho Boy, me and you had a weird interaction in order to basically kind of have a familiarity with each other. Do you want to explain how me and you have had an interaction before?
We have had an interaction. So like a couple guys kind of helped train me. So one guy was a guy here in North Carolina named Eddie McCoy. Lodi from WCW helped me a ton. And I used to go down and train with Matt Sydal quite a bit down in Florida. But like my primary place where I had an access to a ring was in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Are you guys there living there now? Are you guys in North Carolina?
Yeah, like right outside of Fayetteville. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow. Good for you guys. I love North Carolina. If I ever decide to move out of Virginia, which will probably never happen, North Carolina will be the first place I go.
It's one of the greatest states on earth, man. I mean, the taxes are not that high, and then the properties are still reasonably priced. I mean, you know, you can get a huge mansion like house out here for like $400,000, man, which is
pretty cheap.
You know, right? I mean, anywhere else, you know, I mean, we were talking to, I forget who. Yeah, her sister. And I mean, she was saying that, like, you know, our house was a couple $100,000. But she was saying, like, where she lives at, like, our house would be, like, valued at, like, over $1 million, man. So, I mean, Damn. It just shows you, like, you know, California and just all these different places. But Eddie was doing wrestling training, and I had access to his ring. And they did, like, a little NWA tryout. Brian Hebner's gonna there. He's scouting talent, and I just signed up for it. I went to it, man, and Brian did not make it, but he was there via the video chat on the iPad, and I came out. I wasn't really that good then. I mean, I was just kind of learning how to do stuff. I was real green, and Brian had texted Eddie, the guy who was running the training. He said, "Man, if this guy can ever learn how to like." Actually work, then he's probably going places. So I was like, well, maybe I got a shot at actually doing something here.
Now, with that being said, I've done a little homework on you, and it looks like that you're making some movements, man. It looks like you're getting a little wave going. And I've actually watched some tape on you, and you know what? You're not the same guy that I video watched. That's for sure. Your body, your physique, should I say, has not changed either, except for the good.
Thank you.
You're incredible shape, man. And I commend you for that. Cause I know how hard it is to do that.
You gotta be a total maniac to just want to do that all the time.
That's really crazy. You said that because I want to know where the fuck did Psycho Boy come from? What's going on here?
Okay. So my outside of wrestling, like my real gig is that I have been, running supplement brands for about a decade. And before I ever got into wrestling, all I ever did was bodybuilding shows for like 10 years.
No, wait a minute. Let me cut you off 1 second.
Yep.
Supplement brands?
Yeah, I got a few supplement brands that I own. And like I do all the marketing. I mean, like we're in lots of stores. I'll give you the names like when we get off and all that. And if you guys want some stuff, we'll send you some stuff and everything.
Are they kayfabe supplement, brother, or just
supplement? No.
These are no kayfabe on the supplements. Okay. Legitimate brands.
All legal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Damn it, son of a bitch. Okay.
But, you know, if you need that stuff, I mean, I could probably turn you on to some places where to get that stuff too, man. We will definitely be talking off air.
We'll definitely be talking off air. All right.
No problem at all. But, you know, through doing the supplements and bodybuilding, man, you know, I knew a lot of wrestlers because I sponsored a lot of wrestlers, like with product and stuff like that, because they have, you know, they had big followings, and, you know, I could leverage their following, and they're getting free product and making, you know, commission, or some of them, you know, we would pay salaries to and whatnot. And that's how I met EC3. And and when I met EC3 actually kind of became like one of my best friends, and he had just got released. So I started training wrestling, man.
2021.
Like September. Say again?
2021.
No, a little bit earlier than that. So like it was, man, I started training maybe like September 2019.
Okay.
And then, you know, like the COVID stuff happened like right after that. Right. So I was kind of like, you know, they were like everybody was doing, right? Like they were kind of like having some training sessions like on the low and trying to, you know, just keep people from finding out about it. And then when they kind of started opening everything back up, EC3 was in that wave of wrestlers that got released from WWE during the pandemic. And when he got released from WWE, me and him had talked a little bit, and I told him like, yeah, like, you know, I'm doing some wrestling training and, you know, this, that, and the third. And he just messaged me one day and he goes, man, we're shooting this thing. His 90 days was coming up with WWE. And he goes, we're shooting this thing. It's going to be like a, it's almost like a piece of art. It's like a cinematic wrestling vignette or whatever. And he told me, he's like, you know, man, they're kind of like pitching me all these guys to like be in it. And he was like, man, they're just all kind of small. And he was like, I'd love to have somebody in it that really like, that like looks like a total badass. Right. And he's like, yeah, man, you got all these tattoos. So I was like, yeah, dude, I was like, I'll do it. And he's like, well, you know how to take some bumps and everything. I go, yeah. So that is when I kind of started learning that like nothing in the wrestling business is structured or planned or has a plan. And I come from a world where I'm planning everything down to the T. I know all my shtick. So this is like a Wednesday when he hits me up. He's like, can you be here on Saturday morning in Orlando? And I was like, well, yeah, I guess, you know. So I book a ticket. I go down there. We do the deal. That ends up on Impact. And I kind of realized then, because that was like my first like big budget like production thing that they were doing. And like that's where I met Moose, and that's where I met Braun Strowman and Spud and all these guys, man. And, you know, I'd never met like any like real deal guys that were like on TV that had done wrestling. And when we did it, I just kind of felt like, I was like, man, you know, like this thing went really well. And if I really apply myself to this, I could probably do something. And I'm just one of those people too, right? Like I can't do anything at 60%. So once I started doing it, it's like, man, like I got to do this at 100%, and I got to really be the best at doing this. And I just became totally obsessed with it.
I just want to tell you this real quick, and I don't want to cut you off. Okay. I really don't. And but you said something right there, and I want to reiterate and push to you. And I'm sure Angel can tell you the same thing, brother. Your passion and knowing what you need to do to be what you want to be. You're right. It ain't fucking 60%. It's 100%. It's all in or nothing, man. You know, I can't say this for Jimmy, but I'm just going to say this. Yes, I'm a happener. My dad was in the business before me. That gave me a disadvantage where people thought it was an advantage. And I can tell you that to be truthful. And I can tell you, I was 100% all in. Angel's worked with me 100 times. I'm all in. I don't depend on my daddy. I don't depend on nothing. I am all in. And as my podcast, I can't get out of it. I can't. I've retired. I still can't get out of it. 100%, just like it is in the gym, it should be in wrestling. If you're going to go up in the mornings when you can't get up and you just get up anyway because you know you got to do it, it's the same fucking thing. And that's the only way you're going to get to your goal. It's the only way. It's only.
Well, go ahead. You know, and not to cut you off, but, you know, when you say that, you know, it's like this, right? Like when I started training wrestling, I was 33. I'm 37 now. And at one point in time, like my goal was like, man, if I could ever just have like a job match on television, that'd be pretty cool, right? So when I kind of figured out like, okay, like I'm going to take this all the way, give it 100%. My mentality on wrestling was, if I want to be a TV wrestler, then all I need to do is work TV wrestlers. I don't want to work Joe Schmo for $20 on the indies. I'm not going to learn anything that way, right? So through EC3, I had access to a lot of wrestlers. And being that when I started at 33 years old, I had already kind of built a life for myself outside of wrestling. So in terms of just like being financially stable, I had money that I could invest into my craft, right? So my thought process was, and I didn't really know anything about the indies, like per se, that like guys could work for companies and then they could also take indie dates, right? So once I kind of figured that out, I was like, okay, like I have access to like all these wrestlers from like AEW and TNA and Ring of Honor and, you know, New Japan. So I was like, if I can just bring these guys in on my own. So I would work with the promoters and I would be like, hey, like I'm going to bring Moose in. You keep all the money off the door. I'll pay for his flight. I'll pay for his booking fee. And most guys would hook me up and give me like the friend price and everything. They just stay at my house. I'll bring my own camera crew. They'll film the matches. So I'll get the match with the guy with the name.
It's called the Brother Price, by the way.
The Brother Price.
Yeah, the Brother Price, right?
Yeah. Okay.
The Brother Rate. So I would get the match with the name. I would get it on film. I could put it on my YouTube channel and promote it. And then I would get the experience of being in the ring with the TV guy, right? And I always tell like the trainees, like when we go and like we're helping out and doing things at the training center sometimes, I'm like, man, you learn more doing a match, a real match in front of a crowd for 10 minutes with a real TV wrestler than you will ever learn in 8 months of practice, because you're learning stuff like slowing down, pacing,
yes,
taking your time, you know, just all those things, man, that you cannot learn that in an empty building, man, just rolling around with brothers that are there in the building training with you. And you don't really get, to me, you don't get any better working guys that are at your level. Like, you have to work guys that are just way better than you.
You're hitting me in my wheelhouse right now, because this is all stuff, even from a referee standpoint, that I learned from very early on, is you, from day one, be a sponge. And never, just keep absorbing that knowledge. Even if you don't have to say anything. You don't even have to ask questions. Be in the room. Listen to the older veterans. And a lot of people out there, unfortunately, I like the fact that at 33 years old, you began your journey. And I think you, being 33, you had that maturity level to know, hey, listen, I got to, you know, I don't know everything. I may think I do. It's like I say, I've been a Maple Leaf fan for 60 years of my life. Doesn't mean I think I can coach them to the Stanley Cup.
They break our little hearts every year.
I know, exactly. But but like you said, teaching things like pacing, when to slow down. Yes, you can do your twisting, burning 450 hammer Phoenix splashes.
There it is, Jimmy. There it is.
I have to get that in once a week. But put it in a place where it makes sense. And don't use it as a false finish, because if you're going to hit a move like that, I'm going off on a tangent here. I can't help myself. When you're going to hit a move
we do that often.
The guy who hits the move has to sell almost as much as the guy taking it, because that's a big impact. And I think a lot of that's getting lost. So who are some of the big influences on you? I know you mentioned Moose and stuff like that. Who's someone that and Angelita probably.
I got to first say my wife, because if I don't, she'll destroy me.
Really quickly, I know exactly where you're going with the wife thing, because my wife is my guardian angel and my inspiration. So I know exactly where you're going.
Well, both of you guys can go fuck yourself. I don't have a wife. So I'm kidding. I love y'all for that. But in a little while, we're going to play a little game with y'all. Y'all didn't know this yet, but we'll get to that. So don't kiss her ass yet. We're going to figure something out.
I may have to do it later if I mess anything up.
And I'm sure you won't mind. But anyway,
there you go.
Well, go with Jimmy's question. I can't remember what it was now, but I'm lost and tossed and whatever.
No, just some of the guys who.
So, man, dude, I have been the biggest wrestling fan, like, man, since I was yay high, man. I mean, I'm talking about Coliseum Video, WWF, man. And like my favorite kind of wrestling is like 93, 94, 95, 96 WWF. It's my favorite kind of wrestling. All the wrestling makes sense. Everybody's a character. You know, nothing's like, I don't want to say nothing's overcomplicated, but it kind of, none of it is kind of complicated, right? Like, you know, when I watch wrestling now, I don't much watch anything new unless it's like a guy I know who's like having like a big match or something like that. And I want to check it out. But most of what I watch the wrestling for, you know, if I'm watching old tape and studying, is just pacing, man. Like, what are they doing? When do they get into the run spots? How do they slow that down? Where are they doing the cutoff? Things like that. But man, guys like Bret Hart, of course, Shawn Michaels, man. I mean, like one of the best matches I think was ever done was like Bret Hart 1-2-3 Kid on Monday Night Raw. I think that was in 93. I mean, that match is totally unbelievable. I mean, you know, anybody, Jeff Jarrett, man, guys like that, man, that can work, man. I mean, they're really good. Eddie Guerrero, Chavo.
God bless
you. I mean, so when I'm watching wrestling, this is the stuff that I'm watching to learn from.
You brought up an interesting point there because you mentioned learn how to work. Not anybody could do, not everything. You know, there's a lot of talented guys out there that could do some incredible moves that we've never seen before. But what the business is all about that you just described is work, working your audience into getting invested into the story that you guys are telling in the ring and getting them.
But you barely see that anymore today. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like anywhere you go, because like when in talking about like the old 92, 93, 94, like WWF and stuff, everybody told a story. Like everybody did. Like, I mean, we can watch like some, like we were watching like one night, because one of our favorite things to do is just like hang out and watch really bad wrestling on YouTube, but we'll also watch like really good, like old stuff. Right. And we were watching like,
that sounds goddamn horrible.
It's really entertaining.
Yeah.
And we were watching like what, like 91, 92, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, like before he was Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Stunning Steve Austin.
And it would be like not 8 or 9 minute match, and like 6 minutes in, they're still doing like arm wringers and headlocks. And then it's like the whole rest of the match somehow happens in the next 2 to 3 minutes, and that's over. And it's like, but you just see so much stuff on like the old wrestling that you just don't see today, but it's all so basic, but it's like, you're not bored with it. You know what I mean? Like, you're not like, when is somebody going to do like a triple Canadian destroyer on the floor? You know what I mean? It's like, they're just doing like normal, like regular wrestling stuff, but man, they're really working the crowd. There's a lot of this, a lot of that. And it's just, we're pretty much working like every weekend. So like, we'll sometimes watch like the other matches on the show. And so it's like, nobody pays attention to the crowd anymore. Nobody. Everyone's just got to do, like, we will watch matches and be like, man, that match felt like it was 15 minutes long and it was seven. And we were like, but they're putting 15 minutes worth of stuff in 7 minutes. And we're just like, oh, like, it's, I mean,
crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, it's so much. And it's just like, there's no story. It's everything is just like, you do two things, I'll do two things. You do two things. And I'm just like, who's training these people? I don't know, like, but they must not be watching old wrestling.
But Angel,
you know what I mean? Because you never saw any of that back in the day that like happens today.
Another term I'd like to use is, a lot of times today when you watch it, it's trying to cram 20 pounds of shit in a 10 pound bag.
Absolutely.
100%.
But here's the problem though. You have to remember this though. You have to really think about this. How old are your kids now?
Eight, just turned eight.
8 years old. All right. I don't know if you remember or not, but I have twin daughters that are 14 and I have Trevor who's 20. All right. Their attention spans absolutely fucking suck. So they want to see the twisting, burning, whatever the fuck Jimmy says. they want to see that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love to sit down with my kids, all three of them, and show them the tape you just told me about. And I want to see which one of them walks out the room and which one stays, honestly, because I don't think for you and I, for most true wrestling fans, that is perfection. But for these young folks, man, it's the demo that they're after. Was it the 18 to 40 or 18, whatever
yeah,
it is?
True. Right. Yeah.
Yep.
They want to see you jump off the fucking roof of a building and go through a fucking Mack truck. I mean, that's just.
Brian, sorry to cut you guys off too, but Brian, this is the Fast and the Furious generation. They, yeah. you know, they want to see visual gratification happen at 900 miles an hour, as opposed to sitting back and watching the intellectual interaction between everybody. And I compare stuff to music and movies. When you watch movies nowadays, everything is like car crashes and unbelievable. Here's this train hanging off a bridge, and here's Tom Cruise yeah. trying to climb up. And so, as opposed to you look at a De Niro who does stuff. Do you guys remember the movie Cape Fear?
Yeah, mm-hmm. My favorite movie.
Oh, my goodness. When you watch that performance, you are just drawn right in, and you're scared at times. You know what I mean? What's the other one he did? Raging Bull with the Jake LaMotta story. That's lost on this mm-hmm. generation. They don't get it. Tom Cruise hanging 130 feet in the air from a train that's hanging off a bridge.
But when who wants to do 100 things?
I don't.
No,
you know?
No, I know. Angelina, I know.
No, that's why I was heavy character driven. But that's like what we'll do. Like when we like pop into like the local wrestling school, or like if we do seminars or whatever, if we get to the point where we're like, okay, we're going to do matches, right? We want to see matches. One of the first things I'll say is, I don't care who is what, but make it obvious to me right off the bat who is the heel and who is the babyface. I want to be able to just sit here and tell. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't want two people doing things, because that's what you see so much. And I'm like, but how's anybody going to get invested in you? Like, why is anybody going to care? And you want people to care, you know, like mm-hmm. you want people to be invested in you. That's when they'll cheer you or boo you and buy your 8x10 or buy your merchandise, or, you know, come back to the next show to see you or whatever. But everyone's just first name, last name doing stuff. And it's just kind of like, okay, but I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I feel like yeah. the whole, like, our job as wrestlers is to take this thing that is, you know, scripted and figured out beforehand and portray this as being real, right? So it's like, I don't know, man, when you do 900 things and you're always kicking out, and you know what I mean? Like, you take a massive move and then you're right up on your feet, and you give somebody else a massive move and they're right up on their feet and nobody's selling anything. It's just like, man, y'all are like a whole bunch of Jesuses. Like nothing hurts you, you know, like it's crazy. It's like, I've never understood that. I'm like, that to me is not making this thing that is not real be portrayed as real. It just makes it seem even more phony to me. And like, our jobs is to make people believe this is real.
But you know, even us, like we're heels all the time, everywhere we go. And we kill it at the gimmick table. And like, I mean, obviously
heels do less. Heels do less. Come on now. You got to love it.
Yeah,
totally. Oh, and yeah. I mean, from the moment I walk through the curtain, I'm jaw jacking with people right off the bat, man. And it's like, I don't want to do 100 things, because if I do 100 things and the guy keeps kicking out, man, I mean, I just look like a weak guy.
Mm-hmm. No finishes are protected anymore. Because
oh yeah,
I would love to see, and because he's a good friend of mine, and he gets a bad rep sometimes for all the wrong reasons. But JBL with that clothesline from hell, he always made it look like he decapitated somebody, and mm-hmm. nobody kicked out of it, and it made it feel like every time he hit it, and then that one time when somebody does kick out of it, now it means something.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Well, you know, the Canadian Destroyer is the last move on earth that I thought was going to be done at like every indie show around the world. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I always say, I'm like, oh my God, like Petey Williams, like I know he's still alive, but he must be like rolling over in his grave. Like just seeing yeah. like people doing like, you know, Canadian Destroyers as like a heat spot. You know what I mean? Like, just like it's the cutoff Canadian Destroyer. And it's just like, oh my God, like that is like. But I think it's just because everybody thought it was so cool and everybody just had to be the one that could do it too. But mm-hmm. like the whole taking your time thing and like pacing and getting your character over, like the way that I actually learned how to do that the most, like I, you know, I was in developmental for a bit, so that we just worked on all the things there. But then when we were in TNA, because like Velvet and I, and that gimmick was so character-y, when we would do TV, man, we would do like 3 to 4 minutes. And it's just like, man, we just got to, it was always putting a lot of stuff into that time. There was always, we could just call it afterbirth, like stuff happening after the bell rang, you know, rundowns and cat fights and all the things. And then we would go on house shows and they would tell us that we have 10 minutes and all we're used to is 4. So we're like, oh my God, like, what, how do we fill up all this time? Like, what do we do? And that's where like during the heat is where I like started like talking to myself in my head and was like, that's where I just started doing more character stuff instead of trying to rush to do all the things, which I feel like is what a lot of people do. I just like slowed down and I tell people, I'm like, listen, and this isn't something that like people seem to like really realize until you like hammer it home. I'm like, listen, if you are a heel and you're putting heat on the baby face, and you are doing 100 things to this baby face, man, and they are kicking out. First of all, the more things you do them, the less time they have to sell. So they can't do their job for you to make you and your stuff look good because you're crowding them all the time, right? And then it's at some point, you know, they're going to pop a comeback on you. So it's like, man, like you did 100 things to somebody and they are just like, woo, here's their hot comeback. Like it was like no big deal. And same with baby faces. If they're just all over, you know what I mean? It's like, you can't let the heel like do the things to get the heat, which helps you be a better baby face. And nobody thinks about that. They're just like, but I thought the point was to be the one that did the most cool things. And it's like, no, because once again, if you don't let that person put it over for you, what are you doing it for? And then you're also like, you got to give wrestling fans like a time, a few seconds to like absorb, like see, like absorb what they're seeing and then react to it. When you keep doing more things, they can't absorb and react. So they kind of just like sit there on their hands until something big happens and then people are down. Not moving, you know?
Sorry, Brian. And just to continue on the pacing, it doesn't only apply to a match with the wrestlers. It applies to the show, the television presentation too. Because I notice, and I hate to keep harping on these guys because I know all the people out there say, oh, you're just an AEW hater. I don't hate them. I like them. I want them to improve. I want to see the entire business improve as a whole. But their pacing of their show, it's getting better. But for a time there, it was like you'd have this big moment happen and not letting the audience sit and absorb what they just saw. You're going to the next segment right away, you know, and then you have these picture in picture during the match. Why don't you save the match for the big picture and give the people time to absorb what they just saw by going to commercial after a big moment? You know, it's just this little thing.
Right, yeah.
So a quick question here to switch gears. So Psycho Boy, you've been doing it for roughly 5 years, 6 years?
No, 3.5 working matches, probably. Okay. Yeah.
And Angelina, you've been doing it for fucking
almost
with
24 years.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So you're in the same household. You're doing the same thing. Where does this a little bit, like where, in a good way, I'm saying, like, in other words, you have to be Psycho Boy getting good information from a ring leader. And I'm going to tell you why I say she's a ring leader. I've worked with her so many times and there's been so many spots that she has called through me, through the talent, if they're close enough. She's truly, I don't know if you know what she is, and I'm not trying to say anything that you don't. I'm just saying she's a true ring leader and knows what the fuck is going on in there and knows how to make something that's going not good be good. So where in your relationship, how does this work? Because I know as a man, it'd be hard to say, I have to listen to this woman tell me how to do my fucking job. I mean, that's gotta be tough. And I'm not calling you out at all.
Oh, sure.
What I'm saying is, if Angelina was my wife and I was a referee and she said, you know what? You need to learn how to work the hard camera a little better because your ass is in every fucking shot. I'd have to respect that, right?
Sure.
I mean, we've, thank you, Brian, first of all. I mean, we've had plenty of conversations, but I'm also not that type of person to be like, you're doing it wrong. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
I'll sit there and I'll be like if we, so like when we first got together, I just helped him with a lot of character stuff because that's always been my thing, right? So I'm like, you're Psycho Boy fodder. Like, what in your matches is showing me that you're like a psycho? You know what I mean? Because he was just like, he had this character. He had this character, but he was just doing wrestling stuff. And I'm like, you know, when he's doing like heat and stuff like that, I'm like, oh man, if you just like slowed down right here and like really did something, like made a face or like jaw jacked here, whatever, mm-hmm. he can go off and sell for you. And then you can show me how or why you are this psycho. And then go back to him. And I just tell him like about like just intensity levels and like, and I mean, he really like he's a sponge. Like, I think we said that already. He absorbs mm-hmm. very yeah. well. So I don't ever say like, you need to do this or you need to do that unless I'm like joking. But we'll sit and watch stuff. And I'm like, oh, like, you know, like right here in this spot, like, what if it was like something like this? So we have almost like a conversation, just like a conversation about stuff, yeah. you know? And then like, he really puts it. So if you watch like his matches from like, you know, maybe 2 years ago to like now, he's got so much more character stuff. And you can tell he's a lot more comfortable in the ring. He takes his time more. Yeah, I mean,
I think that just comes with just working like, man, just working like so many TV guys, right? And then when I have like her, like when I started getting booked like all the time, like, you know, every weekend or, you know, twice a week, you know, and then, you know, I'm Ricky Morton and EC3 pretty much got me hired at NWA. I did one tryout match there. I worked a good, really good guy. Me and him had really good chemistry. This guy, Joe Ocasio. And they just did it like a dark match. And then they ended up using that match on the TV program. And then the next day when I came in, so there was 3 days of tapings. I came that Monday and then I kind of met everybody. And there were a lot of guys there that were kind of like putting me over. Like Johnny Swinger was putting me over because he had worked me on the indies. Ricky Morton, Carey, EC3. So there were a lot of guys there that I had already had a lot of interaction with. And when they brought me in, I did the dark match on Tuesday. And then they ended up using that match on the TV program. And then the next day when I came in, I saw Johnny Swinger and he said, they're moving you right up to the power show. So
nice.
I met her at that TV taping. And then we were just kind of like together every day from like that point forward. And
I was going to ask that, but now you already got to it. All right, cool.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we met there and, you know, I mean, we just started hanging out and just never stopped hanging out. And, you know, from there, I asked her, I said, you know, what'd be cool, man, is like, maybe if I had like Psycho Boy and Psycho Girl, you know, I was like, maybe like you could manage me or we could do mixed tags or whatever. So we ended up doing the gimmick for the first time. I was wrestling QT Marshall at this Championship District Wrestling in Atlanta. And we did that. You know, we filmed it and everything. We gave them the tape. We gave Billy the tape and they were like, we're in, like, let's start immediately. Right. So last year, 2023
January.
Yeah. We started the Psycho Love gimmick on NWA, at that first live power. And then because we were hanging out so much, you know, I would just learn that, you know, I started having to do a lot of promos. Because I'm getting booked everywhere and like everybody wants me to do promos now. And she taught me a ton about promos and like how to work the camera when you're doing the promos and kind of becoming the character. And then working with Dr. Tom at NWA, because he was doing agenting there, we would just talk about things like, you know, sometimes like you can do something in a match. And then when like somebody corrects you, it like turns into like a spot. So like, Doc would always tell me, he would be like, you know, like maybe right here, you know, you can do this spot. And like we had like one spot, like where I would like give the guy like a snap mirror out of the corner and I would do like the Mr. Perfect to him and then give him a boot, give him an elbow. And we were like, well, like instead of covering him right there, he can just sell and then she can just hop up on the apron and she can just lick your face and it just makes you go wild. Right. And then there was like another one where this was actually a mistake that I made. A guy went down and I kind of hooked him around the head while he was laying there. And I was doing some punches on him, but I was kind of laying on my side and the punches were kind of like this.
Close to the corner.
Yeah. I was kind of too close. And Doc just told me, he said, man, you either got to get on top of him and mount straight down, right, where everybody can see it and it looks bigger. He said, because when you're leaning on him and you're right here, unless the camera's right on you, you know, nobody can see it.
Right.
And I asked him, I said, well, if those don't look good, what can I do that I can never mess up? And he said, just choke him. And I go, okay. So he goes, maybe. He goes, you know how you do that thing where you take him corner to corner to corner on the turnbuckles? He goes, man, maybe you can give him that eye rake on the top rope and he can stay there. And then you can come slingshot him back off the ropes. You roll back and then you can crawl to him with your tongue out and you look crazy and then roll him over, choke him. And now he said, you know, give him one, give him another one, you know? And he said, man, the whole crowd will hate you for doing it because you're just breaking the rules right in front of the referee. Right. Mm-hmm. So just learning those, having those character spots that I could insert into the heat probably took 50% of the moves that I would do away. Gotcha. Because I would just, I would start the heat and I might start it one way and I'd be like, okay, like we're getting ready to do this character spot. And then we do a little something and then we do another character spot. And then, you know, you know how NWA is, right? So like the matches are 6-minute TV matches. So by the time I would do the corners and rake his eyes on the ropes and, you know, yak him back and do the choke, I mean, there's a minute. And then when I do the Mr. Perfect deal and she licks me, I mean, there's a minute. And then
I love it.
It's like, and then like I'm done. So like when I started having to do, you know, Doc came to me one day, right? And he goes, Fodder, he goes, we all know you can wrestle and we don't give a shit about your wrestling. He said, all we want you to do is get your character over. That's it. He said, that's totally all we care about. Best advice. Forget the wrestling.
Yeah.
I was like, that's what you want to hear, man.
But I took that kind of format that Doc was helping me with there, and then like, you know, us coming up with just different character things. And it's like, man, if I'm doing a 10 or 12 minute indie match, I mean, I can probably do 2 to 3 character spots and a little something in between and we're out of there.
Yep.
And it's like, I don't have to do any moves really. I mean, like, I get a kick out of telling guys now that like, when they're working me, I just be like, dude, like you're probably going to take no bumps during the whole heat. And like, dudes are like, oh man, like that's great. You know, I mean, I work Gangrel and like,
oh man.
Yeah. Just let him do his thing.
Totally easy. Right.
The best dude ever.
Yep. Gangrel, after the match, he had text Lodi because he knew me and Lodi were tight. And Lodi asked him, he said, had the match with Fodder go. And he was like, night off. And I was like, that's the best compliment I could ever got from somebody like that.
And he's, you know, and it goes back to just having like those old school kind of matches. But like every time we go to shows and do that, they're probably the matches that get the best reaction.
Right.
And it's just choking, and it's not 100 flippy doodahs and all the things, you know what I mean? It's a lot of character work and storytelling and getting heat. And some people be like, man, like we've never heard somebody get like, or at these specific shows, like we've never heard people like get that vocally involved in matches. And it's like, yeah, it's not that hard, man. Like I would so much rather do that than just stress myself out trying to remember a million things and whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like we did a show, we did MCW in December.
Is that Maryland? Like Maryland
Championship Wrestling. Yeah. And like people were coming up to us, fans at the show at intermission. And they were like, thank you for interacting with us.
Oh, wow.
They literally like thanked us for like paying attention to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're just like, does no one do that? Like, yeah, I mean, I don't know how to not be a goof in the ring. And like, I can't shut up in the ring. So I just don't, I don't know. Like, I don't understand how you don't, but.
No, I totally get it from you guys as someone who has been privileged and blessed to be part of that era that you guys love, that early 90s to mid 90s stuff. I've learned so much just sitting in the room and listening. You know, whatever match I was given, I would listen to the guys. And I know we got to move to our third count really quickly, but I just love the fact that you are fans of that era. You know,
oh, it's the best.
Literally the best.
Yeah, the best, man.
You know,
like the high flying guys too. Like I worked Matt Sydal a couple of weeks ago, and like we had a great match. And it's just like a guy like Sydal, like he does like his things or whatever, and it's like I don't need to try to do what he does because I'm not going to do it better than he does, Right. So I'm just like, man, tell me what you want to do and I'll be there for you and I'll make all your shit look good. And then when we go to my shit, like we're not doing a whole lot of anything, you know, because yeah, I just need to get the heat just, from the ground.
Ground it pound, baby. Ground it pound.
Yeah, you're just going to sell.
That's it, dude.
That's it.
All right, well, look, I hate we have to do this. All right, so we need to move on to our third count. And what we do with our third count, we're going to come back and I have a special thing we want to do with y'all, and I hope you're in agreement with it. It's going to be fun, we think. I hope y'all do. Hopefully. I hope y'all do too. But anyway, we'll find that out when we come back with our third count.
This is your three count.
Welcome back to our third count. We are thrilled to have Psycho Boy Fodder here with Angelina Love. Fantastic to have you guys here. Brian, my man, you got a little special, we'll say gimmick for these two this evening?
I do. I have a gimmick, a kayfabe brother that we want to do here. And hoping you guys agree. Fodder, what I'm Psycho Boy. I like Psycho Boy better than Fodder.
I do too.
Me too. I bet you do, Angelina.
This isn't that kind of show, brother.
it can be. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to ask you, if you will, and I'm going to do the same for your wife, if you can leave the room to where you cannot hear us. And we're going to ask her three questions. And when you come back, I'm going to ask her to leave. And we're going to ask you three questions. And then we're going to have you come back. And we're going to talk about these questions. And it's kind of like the dating game is what
I
we want to play.
I was just going to say it's like the dating game.
All right, I'm out of here.
All right, is that cool? y'all are cool with that, right?
Yeah. Sure, yeah. He's gone already, so all yeah. Right.
Yeah. He was excited to be wrong. All right, so here's what we're going to do. Is he gone, really?
Yeah, he's in the bedroom.
Okay. Okay. So, Jimmy, let's start with your question. RJ, we'll go to you. We'll go to me. And then we'll bring Psycho Boy back in. And then, Angelina, you need to leave.
Okay.
No problem.
This is definitely not a wrestling-related question, even though this is a wrestling-related show. And everybody who knows me, especially these guys and my wife, I'm a music guy. I love my music. I love my 70s. That's my wheelhouse. I want to ask you, do you know what Psycho Boy's favorite song is?
Don't get it wrong.
Man, I don't even know if he has one. He likes everything.
That is a tough question. That really is.
He listens to everything from rap to like 80s Madonna and like everything in between. Like, I'm not even kidding. Yeah, I mean, like, he'll listen. We play Bye 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 in the car sometimes.
So before he goes back in the room, would he know yours, you think?
No.
Well, then we'll
both... Okay, so I'm really bad at the favorites game too, just so you know. Favorite song. What is the song that he loves? Man, there's a lot.
Come on. Name an obvious. There's got to be one that you know he plays a lot.
Or his go-to karaoke song.
Every time we get in the car, he puts on something different.
Wow.
Every single time. Every single time.
All right. So his normal type of music that he listens to the most is what? So we can narrow it down. We're trying to help you stay married.
Rap, hip-hop.
Hip-hop, rap.
Rap and
okay.
Hip-hop.
Okay.
Would you say Biggie Smalls?
Biggie?
He likes Biggie.
Okay. All right. Well, we're trying to help you out here.
Oh, do I still have to come up with the favorite song?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, no.
It's the fucking question.
Can I come back to it? I really don't know.
Okay, we'll go to question two. RJ?
Okay.
All right. Out of the two of you, who is most likely to be late?
Both of them.
No, we both hate being late. I'll say me because, like, I mean, I'm rarely late, but I think he might be more rarely late than me. So I'll say me.
Okay. Are y'all jotting this down? She said she would be the late one.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. And I pride myself on not being late, but I mean, I think maybe.
Okay. 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 Angel, What is the go-to spot for y'all, or let's not say y'all, for him, when you're on the road and you got to grab something, you don't want to grab it, but you just have to because you're hungry as fuck. What's the go-to spot? And I'll let me make it simpler. Fast food, I guess.
You're talking about a guy who is 100% a dieter.
I understand.
The Arnold. He cooks his food and brings it with him.
Okay, well, if you gotta fucking eat, you gotta eat.
You guys probably thought these were going to be like normal, easy answer questions.
No, actually, we didn't. We tried to make this tough. What's your go-to eat spot? Not fast food, just what's your go-to eat spot?
I mean, he would probably be like okay to eat at like a steakhouse, like a restaurant, like an Outback or a Texas Roadhouse or something.
All right, I'll take steakhouse as an answer.
Yeah, okay. Something like that.
Steakhouse. I won't narrow it down to which one. All right, now we're going back to the one you can't answer.
Mm-hmm.
Just name one. Yeah. Fuck it. You ain't going to get divorced.
Okay, no, this is okay. So this is the song that he plays, and I totally hate this song. So it's not his favorite song, but he likes it. I think it's called Major by Young Dolph or something.
Oh, okay.
It's totally not his favorite song, but he does like to listen to it in the car, and I totally think it's a lame song.
What is it? Major by what?
I think it's called Major.
Dale, Major.
I'm Googling.
Hold on. I have a buddy.
Young Dolph.
Young Dolph.
Young Did you find Major it? By Young Dolph.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Let's see if he even comes up.
Young Dolph. Right. Yeah, Major by Young
Key
Dolph.
Key Glock. Key Glock featuring.
All right. Angelina, you're dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Don't cross paths. Just kiss him and keep going.
I didn't know Dolph Ziggler was a rapper.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
No, it's a young
Since
Dolph.
Since he hasn't been with WWE, he's since he's been away from WWE, he's got to do something.
There you go. If you end up on Busted Open, you can beatbox for him, Brian.
I ain't. You know what? I'm gonna bust open some shit. All right.
Well, he already brought it up. I'm pretty sure.
I went into the. I went into what we call the vortex. Oh, my wife has this thing where she can't have anything going on like in silence. So the fan that's in the bathroom, it stays on all day long. So, and if you go in there, she could be in there and I could literally be laying in the bed. I should be like, hey, you know, blah, 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 blah. She can't hear a fucking thing. She can't hear anything. So I just like always just say like, oh, like you're in the vortex right now. Like you can't hear anything. So
tremendous.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Hey, all right. So look, she had a hard time with this. Let's see if you do too.
I'm such an easy person. I don't know how.
Well, you just wait. Well, you don't know the questions. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go, Jimmy.
All right,
do it up.
I'm going to give you the same question I gave Angelina and see if you can answer it. Because I'm a big music guy. I love music.
Me too, man.
But do you know what Angelina's favorite song is?
From my experience. If you ask her about anything, if you go, what's your favorite kind of wine? She'll go like, I don't do favorites. I don't have a favorite anything. That's what she'll say all the time. I mean, if I have to give one song. Oh. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, the only song that I could think that would have any meaning to her whatsoever would be this song. Let me just pull it up real quick.
All right, hold on. I want to make this simpler. This is hard.
This is really hard.
All right. So, all right. Let me simplify it, and we'll ask her when y'all are together because she'll just give the answer. All right. Mm-hmm. What is her favorite band, musician, singer?
Born. Korn is her favorite band. Korn.
Korn?
Korn, yep.
Is that okay, Jimmy?
Yeah, that works.
All right, Korn. Yeah. All right, we'll go with that.
That's good.
Yeah, now, give us her favorite song, too, that you thought.
I would say the song that would have a lot of... Favorite song with a lot of meaning would be this song, Shania Twain, From This Moment On.
Shania Twain.
Yeah.
Oh, From This Moment, yeah.
Yeah, that was like one of our like one of the songs like she requested be done like at the wedding and stuff.
All right, well, the Gucci stuff's over. All right, move on. Let's go.
Jesus Christ. This is a first for the show, Brian. Come on, you get all gushy, and that only happened at our 100th episode.
Hey, hey, I'm Canadian. I like Gordon Lightfoot, so sue me.
All right, go, RJ.
Hey, whatever works. So out of the two of you, who is most likely to run late?
Her, 100%. No doubt about it.
Okay. I like there was no hesitation.
I'm on time all the time. So like if I tell her we got to get out of here at 3:30, it's going to be 3:38 or 3:40.
Okay.
No doubt.
So if you're on the road and you want to eat, what's your go-to? What place you going to?
Do I have my diet meals with me or not?
Oh, okay. We're going to X-nade.
The diet.
X-nade
a diet. No diet meals allowed?
Yeah.
No diet meals allowed. You're hungry. You ran out of them. You're on a long stretch. You're in fucking Texas. There's a million miles you got to go. You are hungry. What do you want to eat?
Quick and easy. I would go with like.
It doesn't have to be fast food. Just where, what, like what, where you want to go.
Man, any kind of like decent caliber place that has steak. So okay. Like, let's just go with like any steakhouse, like whatever.
Okay. All right. Good enough.
Let's just go with like Logan's or Texas Roadhouse.
Okay.
That's probably easy.
Can you call her back in the room or could she not hear you? The fucking fan.
Hey, listen, when she comes back, ask her, was she in the vortex? It'll be good.
Okay.
Ask her what? What'd he say?
If she's in the vortex.
How
if she was
how
in the vortex.
She was in the vortex, yeah.
This is actually because we did this with, yeah, because we go back with Deanna and Macklin for this.
Yeah, but they were on separate episodes. It was week to week.
They were on separate episodes, yeah. They weren't in the same show.
All right, she's returned.
Angelina.
I'm here.
Are you back from the vortex?
Yes.
All right. All right, here we go. Here we go. All right.
Jeez.
Now, I'm going to start with Angelina only because of the change of the question on the one. So the favorite song kind of was so broad. Okay.
Did you have problems with that too?
He did.
Well,
no, you, Angelina, yeah. I run this fucking thing. Hold on. Now just hold on, Missy. All right. Answer this first, and then we'll get to the other part that you wanted to ask him as you stared it down.
On this show, Brian holds the pencil. That's a big deal.
All right. So, Angelina, what is his favorite group, singer, whatever?
Performer.
Band, performer. Mm-hmm. What's his favorite? And it's right in front of him now, so it doesn't matter. And don't you whisper shit to him, psycho boy. You are a psycho.
I'm just curious to what she would name.
Wait, okay, what am I doing? See.
I'm not going to make you go to a specific song. What's his favorite band, group, singer? What's his favorite? Stop looking at him. Stop it.
Can I name a bunch of random ones? Madonna. He loves Madonna.
Whoa. Damn it. Get in the vortex.
I've just returned.
All right. I'll give you three chances to name. Wait a minute, you didn't name. Oh shit, I fucked that up.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
So that wasn't on me. I was totally confused.
Did I say it wrong?
I don't know. Hey, anytime you're wrong and we catch it, I'm gonna bask in it.
Yeah. So what it is what's your favorite group, song, singer, song. Whatever. Not song.
Oh, we
got away from the song. It was too hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what are my favorite artists?
Yes.
Like Avenged Sevenfold.
Huh.
Avenged Sevenfold is one of my
metal
faves.
Band.
Korn.
Okay. Korn. There. Ding 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 ding. Okay. We got a match.
I got it right.
Good job, psycho boy. Maybe you're not psycho. All right. So, Angelina, He said he wanted to do, out on the road, want to eat. You said what?
You want me to say what my answer was, or you want him to guess what my answer was?
I actually want him to guess. You're right.
So we're out on the road.
Well, I prefaced this question. So he said, I said, do I have my meals with me or not?
And she prefaced it too.
And he said, no meals allowed. So I just told him, like, probably just like any restaurant that had like good meats, like any like steakhouse or like.
Ding, 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 ding.
Circle gets a square. Tell him what he's won, Johnny.
Boom. We are two for two.
There we go. All right.
And Jimmy's question, which was, who is more likely to be late?
That was me, but
that was RJ's question. Jimmy.
Oh, RJ's. I'm sorry. Yes. And the answer was Angelina. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's what I said. I said it was definitely you.
Unanimously me.
Ding, 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 ding. That's three. All good. All right.
There we go.
Now but I did say that when he asked about your favorite song, I said that your answer typically to favorites is that
Let's see what she says. But he did name a really cute song that I thought you might love. This Shania Twain.
Oh, our wedding song?
Yes.
From this moment?
Yeah. All right, that's enough of this mushy shit. Let's go.
There's no crying in wrestling.
The psycho may happen before we get off the fucking air.
Ended it right there.
All right. So, Angelina, who did he say was going to be late? You or him?
Didn't we just do this? Me.
He did say you too as well. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. Yep.
And the song we kind of RJ take I'm confused here.
We already did that. Yeah, no, but no, we said that,
but we didn't do his.
What my favorite song would be?
Yeah. Yes. Well, yeah, but it was more of a, I think you said it was an artist though, right, Angelina?
No, I mean, I literally had to come up with a song. So
what song is it?
All right. You had to guess.
Yeah.
We're not good at this dating game shit, you know, by the way.
Well, so when it comes to the songs, it depends on, it would depend on what genre of music we're talking about.
All right, hold on. Before you say anything else, we'll go with the genre.
The genre first. The genre.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. We're talking genre. Rap, right? Angelina?
Rap and, rap and hip-hop.
Rap is what I said.
Rap and hip-hop. Songs that I listen to all the time.
And before you guess this, if you guess this, I will fucking shit my pants.
I will
run around the yard.
Well, there's two, and I'm just going to pull them up on my phone.
Ooh, oh, my God. Please be right. Please be right.
And I'll tell you, it's one of these two, and I love these songs because she absolutely hates these songs.
We're cooking. we are cooking with gas right now.
She totally hates these two songs. One is called By Mistake. The other one is called Major.
Oh, my God.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
It's from an artist who is now dead. His name is Young Dolph. He's from Memphis, Tennessee.
No fucking way. No way.
There you go.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, we've had many discussions about Young Dolph and this song. And
what the fuck?
There's the chorus of this. The chorus of the song is he says something and then he goes, "That's Major." So me and her all the time, if something happens, she'll like look at me and she'll open her. I say, "Man, oh, like I got some new pack of grapes," and she'll open the refrigerator and go, "That's Major," you know. So that's
okay.
That's why I would think of it. Yeah.
This song is, he played it in the car one time, and I remember like I must have zoned out and like come to, and I was like, "What is this?" I'm like, "This song is terrible," and it's just basically it's like, "That's Major." That's Major. This is like words. That's Major. And I was just like, oh my God, this song is like making me dumber by the minute.
I love that song. It's totally one of my favorite songs. For sure.
I'm gonna have to look this song up and probably be like,
with you, Jess.
I can't either.
Hard time with that.
Hey guys, I'm gonna tell you this. You did much better than other power couples we've had on here. I mean, y'all really were match for match on all these answers. And you've been married.
That's so funny.
Right on.
Yeah. Y'all been married 50 years, right? 50 years you've been married?
And we're going on
6 months, maybe. Going on 6 months.
You were right. When y'all got together at the NWA show, you never left your side.
Literally never stopped talking.
Literally crazy, man.
You're still in the honeymoon phase. It's all good.
Oh, and RJ was.
We plan on being that way until we're 90.
And RJ was so nice to send me the video of this motherfucker.
That song?
Young Dolphy. Young Dolph Ziggler.
It's rough.
That little portion you said there, Angelina, I got to play it for my wife because she'll get a different perspective of the wrestling business because she was around when we were on the road for like 5 days a week and we were home a day and a half.
Yeah.
So people forget that they make the biggest sacrifice. Your family makes the biggest sacrifice. You have
no doubt.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
absolutely.
You two are very fortunate to be able to live that dream together. And that's awesome.
Oh, and like most of the time I can bring my son too. So it's like, that's all, you know what I mean? I literally sometimes will not take bookings if they're not completely 100% worth me leaving home. You know, I'm just at that point where like, you know, I did all the, you know, wrestle a show that doesn't end until midnight on a Friday, get home and then be on a 6 o'clock flight Saturday morning. Like, you know, I've done that forever and ever and ever. And, you know, when you're a parent, you did like when I, you know, when I had my condo in St. Pete, like I could run myself ragged on the weekend and go back on a Sunday or a Monday and sleep from 10 to 4, you know what I mean? And then just get up and do whatever and then just go back to sleep at night. But like when you're a parent, like there is no, that's not an option.
That's a full-time job.
And I think, you know, like good thing with me and her too is right. It's just like, I mean, we do everything together. So like, you know, I work from home, like with my businesses and stuff. And then, you know, like, I mean, we go to the gym together, we're doing errands together, we're at home together, we wrestle together, we travel together. I mean, we literally do everything together. I mean, like, and like now we've kind of even got to the point like where like we don't even like take bookings unless, you know, like if somebody hits her up for like a solo booking, she'll be like, yo, like me and my husband only work together, you know. So, and if somebody hits me up for a solo booking, I say like, me and my wife are like a package deal. Like this is what we do, you know, like, so
the only time we do something like separate, is just like, if Velvet and I do like Beautiful People signings or conventions and we're booked together as the Beautiful People, then we'll go do that. But it's just easier. It makes everything at home easier. You know, he loves coming on the road. So we make a big fun, like family weekend out of it. And I mean, like, that's totally what I'm like living for now.
That's awesome. I love that.
There is not a podcast.
Wait, hold on. In the dating game thing, did he do a food thing for me?
Yes.
We didn't hit that, did we?
Steakhouse.
Oh, wait.
You guys got that.
Oh, I was steakhouse too? Oh, okay.
Y'all were 3 for 3.
You both said steakhouse?
I mean, I said like any kind of like steakhouse or whatever.
Anywhere I can get for me. Yeah. Okay. I don't know if we missed that. I don't remember if we answered
Boy. That went over my head. We cannot have a podcast without talking about the Beautiful People. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's impossible. So I want to talk about that real quick. Just to catch you up. So I was in WWE and I would come home off the road and you guys happened to be on that. Remember when y'all were doing the pay-per-view on Wednesdays, I think it was. Not pay-per-views, but the TV on Wednesdays.
No, that was before we started.
No, I know.
But yeah, I remember because that was like 2003. I mean, all of us were like driving down from Toronto. That was before I got hired by WWE, the fairgrounds, right? The Wednesday pay-per-views or whatever at the fairgrounds.
Yes.
Yeah, so we used to show up to those, like us Ontario kids.
Okay, so before I got to TNA, I was captivated. I'm sure every man in the world was by the Beautiful People. And I don't think it's ever been matched. I'll put it out there. I really don't. And I commend you and Velvet for just, like you said, character driven. My God. And you didn't do much. You're right. You guys didn't do much. It was basically the entrance, selling to the crowd, a short little 3-4 minute match, and the story was told. And mm-hmm. you guys were so over the ratings. If you ever want to break them down, folks that are listening, because y'all are rating people that get on us all the time when we talk about this shit. The ratings told the story about you guys. And it peaked. You guys were on at 9 o'clock. We opened the show at 8. You were on at 9. That was the crossover segment. Mm-hmm. And the beautiful people were on it. You have got to be proud of that, though, in a way. I mean, people could look at it how they want to look at it. Eye candy is why, and yeah. You're right if you say that, especially for me.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, we don't deny that.
Absolutely. Why would you? You're both beautiful people, and that's where the name came from. Right. But touch on that just a little bit. Like, golly, you were bigger than life for a while, right?
Yeah, I mean, anytime Velvet and I talk about that, we always talk about how, because, you know, we've been doing this 16 years, you know, and we still have fans and we still have people who book us and want to see us. And I mean, we're so grateful for that, that we've just been doing it for so long and we've been relevant and loved for so long. But I mean, the thing that we hold near and dearest to our hearts that like nobody can ever take away from us is that we're number one, like Knockout originals. Like when we started the Knockouts division, we were two of the OGs. And then second, we became like big time household names without having the WWE machine behind us. So that was always like a really big thing for us, that we were able to like reach those levels, like without being on that program. And we both tried to be there. I mean, like I was under contract with WWE for 2 years, and, you know, Velvet she did work like Wrestle Victoria on Sunday Night Heat, and like, you know, had done like dark matches and stuff. And, you know, I'm always like a hindsight person. Like I always try to see like, what's the reason that like things happen or don't happen or whatever, because there's always a reason. And, you know, I was so heartbroken when I got released from WWE. And I was like 25 and like thought my life was over. And then when we got to TNA and we started getting really successful in TNA, I was like, oh, like this is why, like it didn't work out for us anywhere else, you know, because it needed to be me. It needed to be her. It needed to be at that time. It needed to be in TNA. And that's, you know, when WWE was going really like PG and we were much more edgy. And I think the ratings showed that that's what everybody wanted to see. And Velvet and I aren't stupid. Like we totally played on how we looked. Like we knew that, like that was always my thing. Like when I was in developmental, I've always been like long blonde hair, cute outfits, lots of makeup, like to the tens for TV. And Velvet was the same. So we knew each other. Cause like when I was in Deep South, she had come down for like a week and we had done like a super random, like indie and Philly together or something. And then I got released in May 2007 from WWE, and we all started the Knockouts division in September. So her and I were both contacted, you know, over the summer, and we ended up starting at the same time, and we had known each other. And I knew a lot of people at TNA from when I was going there on the Wednesdays mm-hmm. in 2004, you know, and there's like a lot of, you know, there's like Tracy's there and Gail and like the Machine Guns and stuff. Like we all did like Demora's Border City Wrestling together. So I knew a lot of people there, but like Velvet and I just kind of like kept to ourselves. And like, we have so much in common and we both love the TV hair, TV makeup, little outfits, super, you know, whatever. So I was totally okay. Like I thoroughly got a kick out of having a really easy cover, judgeable cover to my book. You know, if you look at me, you might like, usually people think like, oh, the really pretty girls usually suck. So I was okay with people like looking at us and thinking that way, because I knew when I got in the ring, I was going to kick ass. Right. So I love surprising people and having people be like, oh damn, like these girls are good too. Like, and I think that's kind of what made the whole package. And, you know, we didn't need to like wrestle. I mean, we wrestled on a lot of the shows, but if we didn't, cause you know, Vince Russo was really good and making sure that as many people as possible, especially the girls, were on the show, put throughout. So if we weren't wrestling, we always did like a backstage segment, like in our thrones with like Kip, or, you know, we would have an interview with Christy Hemme or Lauren, and we would attack them and whatever, you know? So
I think, yeah. And, you know, like we were on TNA when it was on Spike TV, when it was the biggest it possibly was, when we were getting 1.5 million viewers and her and I were like the highest rated segment. And like, I don't know that still to this day that that's ever set in. Cause I'm just not that kind of person where I'm just like, well, like, of course we did. Like, we're the best. You know what I mean? It's like, oh no, I'm just like me. I'm just a girl from Toronto who grew up loving wrestling. And, you know, I never had my WrestleMania moment, but we were able to make a lot of history with what we did with the beautiful people in TNA at that time. Nice. And, you know, that's ours and no one can take that from us. So that's what we hold near and dear to our hearts for sure.
Who came up with that? It's okay. It's okay to do a little bit of Barry Horowitz there. You can
absolutely.
That's fine.
Who came up, Angelina? Who came up with the concept for you guys?
We did. Me and Velvet.
Really?
Yeah. Because you know, when all the girls, because you know, there was a huge chunk of us that got signed at one time to start the division. So I remember, like, you know, Jeremy Borash would be emailing us like, hey, like, you know, is there anybody that you already know on the roster that you'd be cool that we like put you in a hotel room together and blah, 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 blah. So like Velvet and I had been like, oh, yeah, like, we'll like stay together. Like we know each other. So that's totally cool. And then, you know, you just hang out and we have the same like sarcastic sense of humor. We're both total goofs and we like the same TV shows and just stuff and things. Right. So, we were just like in the hotel one night and this was when the Knockouts division first started. And we were like, what can we do different? Because every girl in the Knockouts division is one singular character. She's just here's this girl and here's this girl and here's this girl. We were like, we should do like a group or like a team or like, you know, something where we do like a group together. So we kind of like came up with that idea and we pitched it to Vince and he was like all for it. And we wanted to call ourselves something different than the Beautiful People. And he came to us with the Beautiful People. We totally hated it. We hated our names. We hated the Beautiful People. But that is just what, you know, ended up going with. And obviously like it grew on us. But I mean, we were also given a lot of creative freedom. You know, like we kind of knew like our, you know, I had a lot of promo work, you know, promos really became my thing. I had a lot of promo work in Deep South. You know, I used to be scared to death to talk in front of people. My throat would close up. I would turn red. Like my voice changed. It was like, I'd rather die than talk in front of people. And that became like one of my favorite things to do. And that was through a lot of learning how to do promos properly in developmental and then taking that and doing it on live TV and, you know, pay-per-view and stuff with TNA. And we had a lot of talking segments and a lot of promo work. And that was like, that was really, really fun. That's what I like helping people with, you know, today too, is like promo stuff. That really helped get us over too. So it was all the things, right? So like when we would kind of be like, hey, like you have to do this promo, some things would be written for us. And, you know, we just had such a good relationship with Vince where we could be like, I don't, man, I just don't know if I could just this like one particular sentence. I'm just not sure if I could say this. And make it, because we were so big on just sounding like totally like not scripted, not fake, like just like where people can't tell if we are really like that or not. We're not acting. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we would just be like, I mean, I just don't know if I could say this specific thing and make it come across as believable. Like, could I maybe say something like this instead? And Vince would be like, oh yeah. Like, I totally trust you. Like, I know what you're doing. Just hit this bullet point and this bullet point and this bullet point, and I'm sure it'll be great. You know what I mean? And we were like his one take wonder girls. Like we always tried to be the one take wonders and all that kind of stuff. And so I think just having such a good relationship with Vince and just all of our segments and the stuff we said and did was really easy to like, just throw around in a circle and make it happen to the best of what we could do. And so yeah, man, I mean, everybody who's ever, I say this to him and anybody who will listen, I'm like, every single person who's ever been in TNA, I wish they could have experienced TNA from 2007 to 2010.
No doubt.
That was the best time to be there.
So that's unfortunately, awesome. Guys, this is the worst part of our show, in my opinion, is I want y'all to put over your social medias, where everybody can find you at, and golly, I'm so sad it's over already. I want to keep going, but
we can always do round two.
Absolutely.
Oh, there you go.
And I would love
always
to.
Down for round two. That.
I would love to, because there's two of you. So there's too much to dig into both. So yeah, it's great. Mm-hmm. I love it. So guys, put out where you're at, your social medias, all that stuff, and we'll get you out of here.
Yeah, Twitter at actual alove, Instagram alove, the number 4life 222. I have a website at www.angelinaforever.com. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine's just everything is at LOKEYS910. YouTube, I've got a zillion free matches on there. YouTube.com/psychoboyfodder. And then our merch store is psycholovewrestling.bigcartel.com. So hit us up. We're around. We're making towns every week.
Awesome. So,
one last question from me. Do you guys deliver to Canada?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Just make
worldwide sure. Shipping, Jimmy.
There you go.
Good. Well, look. Right. We're gonna sign off, but y'all hang on just for a few, and then and we're gonna sign out real quick, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Thank y'all so much for joining. Love you both. And yes, I did say I love you both. All right, you won me over, Psycho Boy.
Thank you.
That's not an easy sell for Brian, so that's an awesome job. And great to see Angelina, Psycho
you
Boy.
Too,
great to meet you, man. Awesome.
Likewise.
Meeting you. And
yeah. Thank you guys for having us.
Continued success.
Oh, thank you. We'll do this again soon.
You are tuned to Ruffin and Up!
Another great episode, guys. Really liked this episode this week. I can't wait for everybody to hear it coming out tomorrow. Or as you're listening to it now, so it doesn't make any difference. But first, Jimmy, my man, I think this is the first week where people haven't come at you online and you've lost more hair.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I haven't been. The Canadian heat magnet apparently has lost some of its magnetism. I don't know. But as far as where you, this was a great episode. I had a blast. This was awesome. As far as where you can find me here every week with you guys, kicking it up, loving it, guys. We're having a great time. You can also catch me at Wrestling Inc. on Monday nights after Raw, on Wednesday nights after Dynamite, just giving our opinions and stuff like that there. And of course, my ref and rants from Mondays to Fridays, you can catch them there where I do my little critiques or put stuff over at times. You know, I do that as well. These are just the opinions of me and me alone, and it's not to tear down, to help tighten the screws, as we say, and maybe help someone in the process.
Behab, what I think it's getting to that time of the year where you're going to get the gym photos on your Instagram. You're going to get this, you know, strutting, flexing. Out of all of us, you have the best hair. Fortunately enough, you didn't put your hair on the line for La Greca. So, like I said, I got to keep my job here at the show, so that's why I'm agreeing with you.
Well, that's cool, man. Yeah, I've been kayfabing my body for a while just because I'm getting it fucking jacked so I can just have some nice Instagram pics. I'm trying to look as good as our last guest, which was fucking Psycho Boy. That's fucking impossible.
I don't think that's impossible. You got to start. You need to get those sleeves, man. That's, dude, I can't imagine. You get all the oil on that. Dude, pops like Randy Orton, man.
Oh, he's fucking jacked. But anyway, also, just awesome to catch up with my dear friend. She is such a sweetheart, and her heart's bigger than anybody I've ever met. I mean, seriously, she's just a wonderful person, Angelina. It was awesome to have them on the show tonight. And, yeah. But you catch me on social medias if you want to, if you want to catch that danger. At Baby Hebner on Instagram, at Baby Hebner on Instagram. And other than that, I don't have fucking else shit. That's it.
Well, ain't that all be all. But anyways, you can find the show at Reffin' It Up on Instagram and Twitter. Go over and subscribe wherever you're hearing this. Appreciate you guys tuning in this week. Next week, gentlemen. Oh, first of all, excuse me, JD Hoop, who does the absolutely fantastic artwork, not only this week, but each and every week for the show. Keep in mind, gentlemen, keep your eyes out. WrestleMania weekend, you're going to see his gear designs. Him and DJ Rod will be all over WrestleMania weekend. You'll stay tuned to our social medias for that. You'll find out who very, very soon. Shout out to AJ McKay. Great sound for this as well. Next week, guys, we'll be welcoming in Wildcat Chris Harris to the show. Looking forward to this. Absolutely phenomenal talent. Can't wait to pick his brain. Another one of those guys that Angelina was talking about in that time frame of TNA.
Absolutely.
That was absolutely phenomenal. very much not given his flowers, I think, but we'll get into that next week. But for Mr. Jimmy Corderas, for Mr. Brian Hemner, I am RJ. We will see you here next week on Reffin' It Up.
One, two, three.